Greetings, everyone. This is Eric Andelin, Senior Workflow Specialist with SimActive, and you're listening to Episode 17, Cameras on Drones and Aircraft, Is Bigger Always Better? Of the Pixels and Points podcast. And with me today, I have Kevin Grable, System Sales Manager with Phase 1. Kevin, say hi to everybody.
Hey, everyone. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the audience, they don't know, we're going into September with Commercial UAV Expo. Kevin and I were just at MAPS, the summer meeting in New Hampshire. So we started chatting about new technology, what's coming out with Phase 1, things like that. But I thought it would be good to have Kevin in and join me on this webinar and talk about some of these topics. So Kevin, do me a favor and just introduce yourself to our guests.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know me, as Eric said, my name is Kevin Gravelle. I work for Phase 1 in the Manned Aerial Systems Sales Department here in North America and South America. I have colleagues around the world. For those that don't know a whole lot about Phase 1, our main headquarters is in Denmark, and we have our manufacturing facility in Japan, where we can, you know, make everything, put all the components together, and make the fabulous cameras that we do. And then, of course, we have support based right here in Colorado, and a new calibration lab that just opened up. We're really excited to be supporting the North America users of Phase 1 cameras. We have cameras that go from the drones, as we're going to be talking about here today, manned aircraft, which is my passion. And of course, we have cameras that now go up into space. So we cover a lot of the realm of aerial imagery and even outer space imagery. So excited to be here and talk to you about that.
That's actually fantastic. It lines up exactly with what SimActive does. I mean, we actually started in the satellite world and worked our way down. Of course, my background is in aerial photography and survey and mobile LiDAR and all that stuff. But I still have a passion for the aerial photography side of that as well. So being in sales and you know, working with Phase 1, I mean, wow, what a slam dunk. You guys have got an excellent product. The boys in Denmark are making great stuff. And I know from my perspective, being that a lot of Phase 1 sales lead or are in combination with SimActive sales with Correlator 3D. So I know you guys are selling a lot of cameras, and that it, you know, from all of the data sets that we see from our customers, you know, I can attest that it's an outstanding product. We love it when somebody calls us and says, I'm working with a Phase 1, because, you know, we know they're 80% past the battle already. So in this webinar, again, cameras on drones and aircraft, is bigger, always better. And it kind of came up before we got together at MAPS. There's a new Sony camera out there that's like a 61 megapixel camera. So that doesn't really make it medium format, doesn't really make it small format. So, you know, we started having the conversation of, you know, what are the defining lines between small, medium, and large format? What makes a camera, you know, just a, you know, off the shelf store-bought camera versus another camera? And so we thought this would be a good time to revisit these topics and have an expert like you involved in this. And you can take expert with a grain of salt. Just like I'm a professional, you can take that with a grain of salt. But I thought we would get into this conversation more so than, you know, those of us that were at MAPS talking about it. The topics that we're going to cover are as follows: analyzing different camera types and sizes available, understanding the factors affecting camera quality, selecting a camera for photogrammetry, and then, you know, processing data from any camera with Correlator 3D. So let's talk a little bit about analyzing different camera types and sizes. We almost put you guys in the bucket of medium format. And, you know, that may or may not be wrong, but I've always thought that a small camera is a camera that typically is attached to the drone when you buy it, whether that's a, you know, a DJI or one of the other brands. It's the camera that comes with the drone. Medium format would be, so back to the small format. Small format could also be, you know, a cheap Nikon or a cheap Sony camera. And I don't mean that they're cheap in a sense that they're not of good quality. I mean that they're not expensive and you can run down to Best Buy and get one. So to me, that's still probably small format. And then medium format is where actually somebody designed a camera for the purpose of mapping. And it's of a high enough resolution that you can fly in an altitude, you know, of, you know, above 1,000 feet, 700 feet, something like that, and capture good data. And then large format, of course, is what you would see in, you know, aircraft, something you would see like an Intergraph camera or a Zeiss camera or something like some of the old film cameras thing. You know, give me your thoughts on, you know, where you see that spectrum.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail pretty squarely on the head with that. You know, one of the major definitions of a medium format sensor, you know, the physical CMOS or CCD sensor, is the physical size of it. The, you know, the small format cameras are typically more 35 millimeter film equivalent.
Yep.
And then, of course, the medium format is going back to like the 70 millimeter film or some of those, you know, the technology is such that it's equivalent to those types of film sizes. And of course, okay, the large format being that, you know, 10 inch film that we all knew growing up.
Okay, that makes more sense. And, you know, it's been a while. It's been a long time since I've dealt with film. So I don't even reattach that when I think of size, but absolutely right. 35 millimeter, 70 millimeter, and 9 or 10 inch makes sense for the definition. That's pretty good. In the medium format world, from the mapping perspective, we would think that maybe Leica started it with some of their smaller cameras. And especially since the digital world, it's pretty much been you guys and not very many others. That's pretty cool. And the fact that, you know, team in Denmark recognized that. And I know they were doing, you know, tell them a little bit about camera, you know, how did phase one go from, you know, what was their original cameras and how did they to come to the idea that, hey, this, we should be looking in the mapping world?
Yeah. Phase one was one of the first camera manufacturers to put a digital back onto, you know, basically a film camera to kind of scan during the collection phase. You know, it was kind of a scanning back, if you would. And so phase one has been doing that for, well over 30 years now. So we've been involved with digital imaging for many, many years. And, you know, phase one actually has kind of three tiers of, you know, our business focus, with geospatial being, you know, probably the largest of the three, but we also have bespoke photography, which is, you know, the high-end fashion photography, marketing photography, you know, for magazines and things like that. And we, you know, that's a really strong division. And then we also have a division that does cultural heritage. So, you know, photographing books in museums and, you know, just capturing, you know, culture throughout the world. That's a really important part of our business as well. And, you know, you got to have all the finite details to maintain those pieces of history that otherwise will be lost and just continue to deteriorate no matter what we do. It's just the nature of time. But back in 2012, you know, we were approached by a company that said, hey, we like your cameras. We want to put them on an airplane and take some photography. And, because of that, we've now grown into having the ability to have complete systems with an Aplanex IMU and a flight management system, you know, the individual cameras that can be paired with Optek and Regal LiDARs. You know, that's the large majority of companies out there have a phase one camera with their products and their LiDAR sensors. And we're just happy to, you know, continue that tradition as far as seeking out the best quality imagery that we can from the technology and trying to stay on the cutting edge of what aerial survey can do and what you can see from an airplane.
Very cool. Very cool. And yeah, we'll get to that as well. When we talk about cameras, we're also these days talking about integration and how those cameras integrate with IMU, the airborne GPS, and LiDAR. And we see a lot of that. I mean, we see a lot of LiDAR sensors that are mated or tied to your camera as well. So that's really cool stuff. So that being said, so we've talked about camera size, and let's talk a little bit about the factors that affect camera quality. In cameras in general, just the basics of cameras, you know, lens quality. I mean, that's a big deal.
Huge deal.
Again, when we talk about drones, the lens that comes on the camera of the drone that the manufacturer provided, it's not necessarily the greatest lens in the world. You buy one and then you buy another one, and there may be a big variation in that, in the quality of that lens. I know in the medium format world and in the large format world, you know, going back to when I was a kid sitting in the back of the airplane, you know, operating the camera, those cameras had to be calibrated. They had to solve for all of the issues with the lens, so you knew exactly all the parameters, you know, and they spent a lot of time creating those lenses. With you guys, it's the same, correct? I mean, we're not talking about Joe Bob's Nikon lens strapped to your product. You guys build your lenses as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We manufacture and fine tune the lenses there in the factory in Japan. And it's quite the process. I've yet to have the pleasure of going and seeing it firsthand, but I've seen some videos from the things they do, and it astounds me at what they're able to do over there.
Yep. And you talked about the differences in camera size, but what we're really talking about is how much information that CMOS can capture, which turn leads to how high technically fly and still capture data specification that's required. So you're the first to create the camera, the digital camera backs.
Well, and it all has to do, of course, with the resolving power of the lens and mating the CMOS sensor with the best possible lens combination. That's why, you know, you don't just have an adjustable focus lens. It's a fixed focus lens. You can have a very finite measurement on your principal point of the camera. You can map out the MTF data of the lens so that you know exactly what issues are in the lens. I mean, every lens, no matter how perfect the glass is going to have, you know, some sort of anomaly that has to be solved for. It's just the nature of it. And then, you know, we use a fairly industry standard 3.76 micron CMOS sensor. It's a backlit CMOS sensor. And backside illuminated CMOS sensor. Sorry. But that allows us to have a really, you know, tight coupling between the two. You know, of course, with that high resolution CMOS sensor, yeah, you can technically fly higher to get the same GSD as you would with a lower level quality CMOS sensor, but you know, at the same time, you got to have the resolving power of the lens to allow for that as well. There's a lot of atmosphere that starts coming. And it, you know, it amazes me when I see the imagery that we collect from our drone versus, you know, the imagery we will collect from the air, from an airplane. And, you know, while the resolution at the same GSD can be the same, you know, I do feel like you can see just a little bit more detail, you know, from the drone, just because it's flying at 400 feet versus like 1500 feet from some of the other applications.
Right. And one thing you mentioned there that I want to go back to real quick is a fixed focal length lens. Because a lot of times when somebody buys something off the shelf, they're buying, you know, a Sony or a Nikon or whatever, you know, they happen to strap to their drone. That usually doesn't come with a fixed focal length lens. So you either have to buy one or you have to lock it down. And, you know, the drone's flying around and buzzing around. It's vibrating, you know, Even if you lock it down, you're going to have some issues to deal with that lens. So that affects the resolving power, like you said. So something certainly for people to consider. And then, you know, a little bit about...
And even for...
Yeah, go ahead.
Even for our UAVs, you know, we do have a fixed focus 80 millimeter lens and adjustable focus 80 millimeter lens. You know, for inspection applications, that sure. adjustable focus is great. You know, if you're looking at a tower or you're looking to inspect something, you know, having that ability to adjust the focus or have the system adjust the focus for you is phenomenal. But if you're trying to map with that, you know, then that becomes a problem. So that's why we do have the two variations, especially for our UAVs.
Right. Right. And then let's talk about just a little bit about what used to be called a metric camera, but more talking about the way the product is manufactured and what type of specs it's manufactured to, so that atmospheric conditions don't affect it at different altitudes, therefore don't change the minutia of the focal length and things like that. So, you know, how are your guys' sensors manufactured different than, say, you know, just a commercial off the shelf system?
Well, there's certainly a lot more testing that goes into what, you know, we will send out as a product versus, you know, some of those others. You know, with test the cameras in, you know, very rugged conditions.
Yeah, I mean, we're even talking about material, you know, cheap plastic versus aluminum that changes the properties of the camera body itself. So, you know, those are the things that people need to consider when they're trying to make a repeatable mapping deliverable. Is, you know, what things are changing the dynamics of that camera mid-flight? And mm-hmm. when you tend to go with, you know, a metal body or aluminum body or something like that, you know, carbon fiber body, you're tend to hold that geometry better than, say, you know, a lesser quality camera, right?
Yeah, certainly. And using the high quality aluminum, high quality everything. I mean, well, let's be honest. I mean, there's never the perfect, I mean, unless it's like made out of really rigid, you know, heavy material that's never going to work well, especially on a UAV.
Yeah.
You know,
weight is a factor.
Weight is a factor. You know, so as cameras try to get lighter, as they try to get more efficient, smaller, you know, there is always factors that have to be, you know, put into your model, if you will, as far as what will change. But having that change repeatable, you know, it's got to be, you have to be able to model it. You have to know what's happening, with the camera, with the material, and know that it's going to change the same way every time.
Right.
So. And that's really important.
And we'll talk about that farther along, how software, such as Correlator 3D, can now handle those variations and recognize them and adjust for them. So even if you don't have the perfect camera, you don't have the most rigid system, we can still produce a high-quality product. It's not like the old days of, you know, stereo plotters when I was younger, you know, that you had to have, you know, diapositives, which were positives of negatives, you know, on Mylar film, and you had to measure the fiducial corners, and, you know, it was all a mathematical and a mechanical solution, and it was rigid. It was just rigid, so you could not handle any variation. It would just create a float in your data set. Now we don't have that. We're using software to do this type of processing. So as long as we know what camera type we're working with in the software, we can compensate for some of those lesser quality problems, some of those. So I just wanted to point that out. But we are also talking about calibration. So, you know, when you're working with a high quality camera, a large format or a medium format, a lot of times they'll come with a calibration report, or somebody will produce a calibration report for them. You know, whether you guys are working with Regal and they do it, or you guys do it yourself. And again, in the large format world, it used to be the USGS that did it, but they don't do that anymore. You are creating calibration to solve for all those issues, and you guys do that as well, right?
Yeah. We have the three calibration labs now. Yep. One at the factory in Japan, and then the one here in Colorado. Yep. Are the newest two. So we've definitely increased the size and what we can do in those facilities. Little shameless plug, I guess, you know, you can edit this out, but phase one does have a user group meeting coming up October 17th through 19th. So we're going to be showing off the calibration lab and having, you know, a great meeting with a lot of our customers in person. So yeah. Anybody watching wants to come, you know, please let me know, and we'll get you information on it.
Absolutely. Me included.
Certainly.
Yeah. So yeah, that is a mark of a quality camera. And again, if it's something that is not provided, software these days, be it SimActive or whoever, can also produce those calibrations for you. So to our users, aware of that. Then the next thing we would talk about is selecting a camera for photogrammetry. On your side, I don't know how much time you spent outside of sales in photogrammetry, but you've obviously dealt with a lot of customers and a lot of different variation in what they do, because we already talked about fixed focal length cameras versus adjustable cameras and the reason you'd want one or the other. Fixed focal length you want for mapping, but that same user may be, you know, working on power lines and things like that, where they want a camera, especially on a drone that's got a gimbal and can turn, you know, all oblique angles. They may want a camera that's zoomable. So project types, you know, I would assume that the users of your cameras are, they even in the mapping or geospatial world, are working on all kinds of different projects. So, you know, how do you guys guide them through the process of, you know, finding the right camera within just the stable of cameras that you guys produce? How do you guys go about that?
Yeah, we'll break it up, of course, kind of in the mapping and inspection realm, and, you know, can further break that down if we need to into manned and unmanned. But as far as, you know, inspection projects go, you know, those are the ones that are, of course, you know, UAV applications, and they're looking to do towers, you know, transmission lines, things like that, that can, you know, be done in a, you know, single lift or two lifts with the UAV. Those that, you know, we do have some that have put these camera systems in a pod on a helicopter, and they want to be able to, you know, fly one length of a power line, you know, looking oblique and another looking nadir. So there are many applications there. We of course try to steer the inspection people into the adjustable focus yep. lenses. And if it's mapping, we stay away from that. And really, you know, we the whole topic of this conversation too is size matter. You know, phase one has a 50 megapixel, 100 megapixel, 150 megapixel. And, you know, one of the things we haven't really talked too much on is, you know, kind of merging a couple of the cameras together to create a larger footprint with our 280 megapixels. So we have a huge range of cameras that can be applicable. But, you know, in many applications, the, you know, the 150 megapixel is kind of hits that sweet spot as far as, will it do it all? Yeah, it'll do pretty much everything you want it to do. And, you know, if you've got a larger area to cover and you're going to routinely do that, then let's look at the 280 megapixel camera system.
Yeah.
I should probably even throw out, you know, that we do have the 880 megapixel, which is, you know, nadir and oblique, you know, for those that are looking for doing more the 3D modeling of cities and towns and larger applications.
Right.
But, yeah, still based on the same technology.
Right. And maybe Maybe that's a secret that a lot of people may not be aware of, is most of the large format cameras now that are out there, they're just a series of smaller cameras, you know, that make up that large footprint. So that's certainly a need that the industry has had, and software and hardware have made that happen. So like you said, you can start with a 50 megapixel camera, and then you can go up to the larger format cameras that you guys have, plus oblique, to do those 3D city models if that's what people are trying to do. Interestingly, you know, your 50 megapixel camera is, like you said, it's a great tool for the drones and those type of systems. So I think you guys hit all of those areas. And the thing I always thought was, when people start talking about using a phase one camera, that to me says that they are either evolving from drones up to the next level, or they're adding that capability with another medium format system. Because in all honesty, it's a lot less expensive to get involved in a media format system than it is in a large format system. And you can do a lot of the same work. So to see the medium format technology evolve and take up a big chunk of that space is really cool. I see it that way. I don't know. I assume you guys see it the same.
Yeah, I definitely see it the same way. And whether or not it's putting the medium format camera on a, you know, small aircraft, that's one of the huge advantages, especially jumping from a drone to some of those medium format systems on either in a strut mounted pod or, you know, with a belly mounted gyro mount. You know, you can fly a lot less expensive aircraft and cover the same area. You know, one of my guilty pleasures, of course, is to use the imagery that collected either internally or externally to make mosaics and stay familiar with my photogrammetry roots. Yep. And, you know, so I enjoy doing projects for our different teams throughout the company. And the UAV ones are great, but it's just a lot of photos to cover what should just be like two or three photos from a manned aircraft.
Yeah.
So that seems to be the one deciding factor for me, is like, man, you know, this is great, great imagery, high quality, but there are so many pictures.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I would say that's always been one of the differentiators with Correlator 3D, is that unlimited images. It doesn't matter to us how many images you import as far as the software goes. And even in the case of phase one, we were the first to import, or to be able to import IIQ directly, so yeah, we could work with the raw data. And that's all great, and I love it. And we have distributed processing, so if you've got 60,000 images, you can process it no problem. But I look at it as you, and I go, man, this is a you know, 1,000 image project if you just rented a plane and flew it a little bit higher. And with STCs for pods being out there, and there's options these days, it's not like it used to be 20 years ago. There are a lot of ways to get into mapping beyond the drone space in an affordable way. And I think the medium format makes that happen for sure.
Yeah, yep. It's certainly a good application and a great next step from the drone world.
Right.
You know, but there too, I mean, you talk about photogrammetry, and just to have that knowledge, you know, software is great, but it's never just a black box. You know, there's always some sort of background to it. So, you know, there's always gives and takes with when you have a project and knowing what's wrong with it. So that's my only hesitation I have on selling people certain things, is, you know, do you have the expertise to do it? The cameras can do a lot. Your software can do excellent things, you know, but do you know what you're looking at the end? You know, keeping that to that quality, yep, is really important.
Yeah. I mean, certainly on our end, it's about, is what you're trying to do designed to happen in our software? You know, a lot of people want to do 3D city modeling, or more so, utility inspection or something like that, which, you know, may go beyond the range of even, you know, of our software. It may be good for someone else's, but that's usually where we end up trying to help people out. You may not have the expertise to do all that, and you may not have the right software, and you may not have the right equipment. We just want to make sure that you can do the things that you need to do in our software and get the accuracy that you need. We'll point you in the direction of different software if that's what it takes for what you're trying to do. And I'm sure you guys are the same way. You know, other than that, you know, I mean, again, when we talk about project type, you know, if you're consistently doing large, large projects, then you probably shouldn't be looking at a drone or, you know, that type of system. You should be looking at that investment in a medium format, or, you know, subcontracting your work, if you're a drone operator, out to somebody who has a medium format camera, so that they can collect that data for you. You know, you may even have the software, you may be using Correlator 3D, and you can process the data. But again, you and I have seen it, you know, somebody will come to you with, you know, 10,000 images from a drone, and you're just like, you know, you spent days doing this when you could have hired the guy down the street to do it with an aircraft and still process the data yourself. So,
yeah,
you know, those are always things that come up to me, you know.
And that's the great thing about like Correlator 3D is, you know, if you have a drone and you've collected phase one imagery with that and you're used to ingesting those IIQs, it's going to be the same workflow. If somebody, you know, flies it with a manned aircraft, the same workflow is going to apply. So that's a huge benefit.
Yeah. So that's the goal. And not that we're talking to people in this webinar who fly satellites, but yeah, you know, again, that's how we got our start, was processing satellite data. And here you guys are now getting involved in, you know, throwing sensors up on satellites.
So maybe we do want to talk to people that fly some satellites, you know?
Well, we do. We do. yeah. So that's really cool that, you know, even in that world, where it takes a lot of time and a lot of technology to put something up in the air, these folks are contacting you guys to say, hey, you're the sensor that we want to put up there. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up is the integration part. We're seeing LiDAR become more affordable, more compact. We're seeing it on drones, you know, and in pod systems. But what's really cool is that they recognize, or the user recognizes, that although LiDAR is great for creating surfaces and things like that, you still want that image to go with it. You know, a picture is worth 1,000 words, absolutely, and a point is just a point. So combining the two, it seems to be the way to go these days. And man, I sure see your cameras being combined with, you know, Regal systems and Optek systems and so forth.
Yeah, it's a great partnership with both of those companies. And you know, on the UAV side and man side, you know, the weight of the cameras are always a little bit challenging for UAV joint collection. Mm-hmm. You know, but there's always great things coming out from phase one and great announcements that will be coming forward, you know, in the near future. So we look forward to both of those projects. You know, my expertise course is on the manned aircraft side. So, you know, I love those integrations. I've always been imagery. I don't know a whole lot about the LiDAR side of things, but it always amazes me what can be done with those sensors, and then seeing the imagery on top of the, you know, data is just phenomenal.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And in Correlator 3D, you know, we don't work with LiDAR data, as far as adjusting it, modifying it, anything like that, but we do ingest LiDAR data. So you can use that as your surface rather than doing it from imagery. But more importantly, for people that have those dual sensor setups, we've got some awesome tools for colorizing those point clouds. And when you present your customer with a colorized point cloud, that can mean a lot more than just a bunch of classifications. So where that becomes really cool is when they have a high quality camera and a dense point cloud, and we can mate those together to create just an outstanding visual tool. It's not a 3D model, it's a point cloud. But you know, color values on a point cloud are to me just as important as, say, a classification that somebody gave. It comes from cameras like the Phase One, make that happen. So I love having you on. Again, we're coming up to UAV Expo. And as you mentioned, you guys are going to have a user group thing in October. Are you got any big announcements, big plans that you're going to have for those shows?
Yeah, I definitely say there's some great announcements coming out. They'll be announcing at Energio the week before our user group meeting. So coming up nice and soon here. It's hard to believe that it's already in August. So
like you said, it's September, October's coming up. And that also means that, we're going to get into flying season. So people should be looking at, what sensors they have and how they're going to process them. So, well, I'd like to thank my guest, Kevin, for joining us. Thank you. I'd also like to thank you, the listener, for joining us as well. This podcast was created in conjunction with a webinar. You can access that webinar as well as previous webinars and podcasts by going to our website, simactive.com, where they can be found under the Learning tab. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast through many of the popular podcast subscription sites. Once again, thanks for joining us. Until next time.